Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Well, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's Alabama Sunday morning. It's Breege Day, St. Bridget's Day. It's Imbolc in Irish. The beginning of spring. Actually, Imbolc began about 2 or 3 days ago, but we're going to celebrate it today, along with St. Bridget's Breeds Day here, because it reminds us that many people are really well aware of when seasons happen. And many cultures were once really well aware, and they didn't wait until some New York weather person told them that spring was starting sometime in April, which is crazy, insane, weird. Of course, that doesn't happen that way. Spring is here. Spring is here. It is the, in the Choctaw calendar, I think this would be the month of big famine. The month when things were running out. But you know, the next month is blackberry month in the 13-month Choctaw calendar, the month of blackberries. It's you're already going to see the green up. It's already happening in the fields, it's certainly in South Alabama. Certainly the trilliums are up. The pennyworts, the other little first signs of spring, they're beginning to come up everywhere. It's time to start looking around. It's time to start thinking about it, and to understand spring in the many languages where we are. Spring doesn't begin at the same time every place. This is the first important lesson of spring. It has similar features wherever it happens. What are the features of spring? So it's not that it's not cold anymore. In fact, it's still a little cold. It's still a little chilly. We may have some cold outbreaks, but the trend is the temperatures are getting generally warmer. We're often through the worst of the freezes, not always guaranteed, particularly with an unstable climate. But we're getting past the worst of the freezes. One of the most significant things about spring is the increasing day length. And Imbolc, the Irish word, means in the belly. And it means the ewes were getting ready to, the lambs were already developing in the ewes. And the ewes were getting ready for this new green up that's about to happen and the lush growth that's about to happen. So the animals know it too. It's already happening out there. It's time for you to key into it. Longer days means that plants are growing really, really well now. As soon as they get some warm days, they're really going to take off. Be interested to hear how they are in your garden. Let's talk about what those days are. How do you plan around spring? How do you plan around spring? It's getting trickier. It's getting trickier because we've had a little bit of instability in climate here lately. I hope it's not permanent. We'll see. But we've had some very late frost that are now happening often enough that it actually shows up in our long-term averages. But in general, the last frost of spring is going to occur, the last average frost, the 50-50 date, when there's only a 50% chance of another freeze occurring. That date is probably around February 15th in places like Gulf Shores and Orange Beach. Maybe even a little earlier in some really warm areas there. About February 15th. as you move up a little bit to where you're in Midtown Mobile, that average last frost date, the date when there's only a 50% chance that another frost will occur, is going to be about February 25th. About February 25th, maybe a couple of days later. If you're in West Mobile, you're far enough away from the water that your first frost, your last frost, excuse me, is going to occur a little bit later. Your 50-50 date is going to be somewhere around March 1st to March 5th. If you're up in Citronelle, it's probably going to be around March 10 to March 15. And Bay Minette, probably about the same. Maybe as late as March 15. But about March 10, let's say that. And then as we move up into the state to Evergreen, it's going to be closer to March 15, March 20 around Montgomery. We move up to Birmingham, it's going to be a few days later, March 25th. And then if we're up to Huntsville, it's going to be in April. Sometime that first week in April, generally. That's how spring works. You can see it moving up the state. It's really interesting. If you had to drive back and forth, which I don't recommend unless you have to, but I used to have to drive back and forth for different projects, and it was really interesting to watch that progression of spring moving up and down the state. So I would have, you know, I would start with the spring in Mobile, and it would be winter in Huntsville, seemingly. And then when it was spring in Huntsville, it was already beginning to trip over into American summer in Mobile. A lot of difference in different parts of the state, and you have to remember that. That 50-50 frost date is the date that's going to be a big key for you for those American summer vegetables like tomatoes and bell peppers and squash and corn, beans, all of those things. That's going to be a big key. And with things like tomatoes, you're going to want to do it as soon as possible. Corn, you want to get it in the ground as soon as possible around that average last frost date. Corn's actually a little harder, and you can take a few risks there. So we need to look at those dates. Did you get them? Did you write them down? Because we need to begin thinking about them. Those are about the dates that you need to begin thinking, how am I going to put my tomatoes out in the garden? When do I plant my corn? When do I plant my sensitive flowers, like impatiens? When can I put out the nasturtiums? When can I put them out safely so that they don't get burned and they can enjoy this cool weather? A bunch of things we got to think about as spring's coming on, and it's coming on pretty fast. When do I think spring starts on the Gulf Coast? I really think it starts about February 15th, a little later than the Irish Spring, perhaps, than in bulk. But about February 15th on the Gulf Coast is a good way to think about spring. It's going to occur just a little bit. It's going to begin a little bit before that last average frost date. Likewise, I think up in Huntsville at the other end of the state, spring probably begins around March 20th, March 15th, March 20th. Though in both places, there's already a spring that is beginning to emerge. It's like we don't have enough seasons sometimes to describe what's happening. So we're already beginning to see the emergence of the new growth of the new year. Get ready for it. It's happening. That's what we're going to talk about today. I'm always a little late getting things planned, a little late getting things planted. Oh, dear. And I think about all the things I should have done before now, but I've got a bunch of seeds here. I'm ready to get them in the ground. I'm going to start getting them in the ground. You call me. Let's talk about what you need to get in the ground. Let's talk about what kind of seeds you need to purchase. You want to talk about where to get them from. Let's do it. Give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106. Sometimes you have to give out too many phone numbers. 251-343-0106. You give us a call this morning, and we'll talk about your garden, We'll talk about the future of your garden. Give us a call.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, here we are. We're back. We're ready to talk about spring. You know, in bulk, the Irish, the beginning of Irish spring, the Irish spring, St. Bridget's Day, St. Bridget's Day, all of these things converge with things like Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras is a spring festival, really, if you think about it and if you understand it. And I always remind people that it really is concurrent with our spring. I think I've said this before, that I don't think Mardi Gras, Huntsville even, Mardi Gras is kind of a weird thing in Huntsville, and I know people may do it there, and forgive me if, but it seems like, okay, but it really is more an overlap with the Gulf Coast spring, which is why I think it was so interesting and important there. It moves around, so it could fit some years, but it's still chillier in Huntsville. It just doesn't seem like Mardi Gras, and Boston just don't seem like a proper fit. And yet I hear about Mardi Gras festivals in Boston. It seems like an odd outdoor event and kind of an arbitrary outdoor event for a place like Boston. It really is a Gulf Coast event, and there's a reason it's a Gulf Coast event, not only because of our cultural heritage, but also because it fits the spring, it fits the season, it fits the time. It should be the reminder when you hear people talking about Mardi Gras that it's time to be out in the garden. So let's think about it. Let's think about what we're doing. Feel free to give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. Rusty in Moss Point says his peppers are starting slowly, and the radishes and the peas are sprouting. And that's good. You know, I think it's a warm, peas are going to sprout quickly. Radishes are going to sprout quickly. Rusty sent me a message last week, and I didn't really get them, didn't appreciate the full import of that question, which was that he was going to plant a special kind of radish called rat's tail radish. I'm glad you experimented with that, Rusty. It's really interesting. The radish flowers are actually quite good, and we forget that a lot of these plants actually produce flowers and seeds, even though we may eat the roots. Radish flowers and seeds are quite good, and the seeds are delicious. And the rat's tail radish, if I'm not mistaken, is a radish that is designed to be seed producing, which is going to match spring conditions really well, because with the days rapidly increasing in length, nights rapidly decreasing, you're going to see plants wanting to go to flower very quickly, very quickly. So the radishes that we plant in fall, those big radishes that take a little longer to develop big roots, they don't do so well in spring. They're going to go to flower before they actually develop the roots. That's why we plant them in fall. On the other hand, there's a bunch of radishes that produce their roots very quickly, and some that are called spring radishes. They're more like the radishes that you put on your table. They're 25 days. I mean, what an incredible thing, getting a crop basically less than 3 weeks, 4 weeks, not even 3 to 4 weeks after you plant it. You're beginning to harvest your crop. What a great thing. These little spring radishes are really nice. There are a lot of them out there that are really neat. And don't be wed to the ones that just look like the ones they put on your plate in fancy restaurants. Look at some of the others. So spring radishes are really nice, but Rusty's trying one that is a seed radish that produces seed. And Rusty, I think you hit it about right. I think it's going to be, should work out really well. The good thing about radishes is they're pretty hardy. They'll be less hardy when they're in flower. But, you know, I think you're going to do just fine. I think they're probably going to go into flower probably around the 1st of March, just after those freezes are over, the hard freezes in particular. And I think you're going to be great. The peas, folks, don't be at all intimidated by peas. Wherever you are in the state, it's time to put them out. They're going to do very, very well. It's kind of funny. You know, people don't seem to mind at all going to the casinos and letting the casino take all their money. They don't mind gambling on those casinos, even when their chances of actually winning anything significant are next to nothing. We don't mind buying lottery tickets, even though our chances are one in a billion. We don't mind doing that. We don't mind putting our retirement account in the hands of traders who basically, you know, gamble it away. We don't mind those gambles, and yet you got a few cents, you got a nickel's worth of seeds, and you're worried about putting it out because something bad may happen. Who cares? It's the best bet you'll make because it doesn't cost you a lot to get into the game. Just go ahead and plant some seeds. Save some. So let's say you want to plant sugar snaps, and you think, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Just go ahead and plant half of them. Plant half of them. If you're in Huntsville, plant half of them. That's what I'm going to do. And then plant the rest later on. You see what I'm saying? If you're in Mobile, you ought to go ahead and plant all of them. There's just no need to delay. There's no risk with peas. They're very hardy. They're very tough. Don't worry about them at all. At any rate, just go ahead and give it a shot. Give it a try. What else can you try this? I mean, certainly if you've got any, try the carrots. I would go with some, if you're on the Gulf Coast, go with some short season carrots. Okay, go with short season carrots, and just give them a shot, give them a try, and let's see how that let's see if they don't work for you. And by short season, I mean carrots that are going to produce in, say, 60 days, 70 days. Some can produce in 50 days. Try those. Don't try the ones that take a long time that are better for fall. So there's lots of things to be planting. Cabbages. I think cabbage, it's probably your last chance for cabbage on the Gulf Coast. I wouldn't plant, and really those cabbages need to be about 18 inches high right now before you put them into the garden, 12 inches, whatever. They need to have several tiers of leaves when you put them in the garden. And so it's time to begin doing that. You could, if you're in North Alabama, you could begin starting your cabbages from seeds. That's okay, too. It's probably better to have started them just a little earlier, but that's all right. You can still have time there. So it's really time to begin thinking about these. You call me if you have any questions about what could go into the garden this time of year. Kale can be quick, and that's the nice thing. I think it really is too late for collards, for starting collards. If you haven't started your collards inside or in the garden by this point, it's a little late on the Gulf Coast, and it's almost too late even in North Alabama because it takes collards a long time to get started. Kale cranks up pretty quickly, and that's the really nice thing about it. So you can go ahead and get it started. Arugula is really nice. I always remind folks, nasturtium. This is, get your nasturtiums planted. They like this cool weather coming up. And, you know, somebody ought to, like myself, ought to be listening to me telling you this, because I need to get my nasturtiums planted. I got a bunch of them. They're going to like these. They're going to germinate well in these warm days. They don't like freezing temperatures. So you start them in containers. Start them in pots. Get them up. They don't take up that much room when you're getting them started. I start my nasturtiums in those little cloth bags. And I, in fact, most of my vegetables I'm increasingly using in the cloth bags, because they're really easy to work with. They're really easy to plant. The roots don't get all tangled up and twisted around like they do in the typical plastic pots, and they're less expensive. And you get a lot of soil room. You get a lot of soil room for the amount of space that those bags take up. Plant some nasturtiums. It's a great time to do it. Give us a call.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. So, got a picture here. Is this some type of stink bug from Georgia and in Pascagoula? I've been finding them on my firewood this winter. Yes, you know, it looks like there's so many different kinds of stink bugs, and it's really hard to know them all. I remember one of my first jobs was scouting cotton. I can't forget that. No one who scouted cotton will ever forget scouting cotton. And having to learn the difference between beneficial stink bugs and non-beneficial stink bugs, damaging stink bugs, and it's really hard. And you just realize, gosh, why are there so many different kinds of stink bugs? And we really don't know. Some of them, we're not even really sure how much damage they do. There are some that clearly do damage. The really big leaf-footed stink bugs are a big problem for us. The one you have, George, looks to me like it's a genus called Bonassa. I think it's a jade stink bug, I'm going to say. I don't know a lot about what that – I don't know that anyone really knows a lot about how much damage that genus does. I don't see a lot of information on them. But a green stink bug. There are some if you're interested, there's a pretty good website for those of you who are trying to work through understanding insects and pests that USDA has, that shows the different kinds of stink bugs and how to look for them. And what's interesting is that it often shows the predatory stink bugs as well, which is really nice to know. It's a really great thing. The pictures are a little bit pixelated, which is not great, but it's a good website and a really good way to begin to understand what's going on in your yard. There are some stink bugs, believe it or not, there are some stink bugs that are actually quite beneficial. Spined soldier bugs, for example, are in that family. They're closely related in many ways to the ones that do damage, but these tend to be predatory stink bugs. They are predators of other insects, and they can be really useful in your yard. So I don't know what to tell you. So the question is, it's also the jade stink bugs. It's sometimes known as a juniper stink bug. George, are there junipers around you? Are there cedars around you? Red cedars, salt cedars, as they're called along the Gulf Coast, because they're a slightly different species. Do you see those? Let me know. And that's probably, I think those stink bugs tend to feed, I'm guessing, that the name juniper stink bug refers to the fact that they're often seen around cedars, what we would call cedars, junipers. Who sent me this beautiful picture of Prunus mumei, the kind of almond relative that is grown as an ornamental. It's in bloom now at Mobile Botanical Gardens. Where is that? That's out. Well, that's at the top of the. That's at the very top of the Camellia Garden that Bobby Green really played a seminal role in creating. Bobby, if you're still out there, good to see this garden performing so beautifully. It's looking really nice. Prunus mumei is in full bloom at the Mobile Botanical Gardens. Worth going to see, I suspect. What else we got? Well, we've got spring facing us right around the corner. So here's what I still think you have time. So I'm going to talk a little bit about it. You don't have much time. You got to do this fast. I'm just telling you. And here's another experiment for people on the Gulf Coast in particular. I often tell people, get your peas started during the 12 days of Christmas. If some of you did that and plant some more peas right now, just do me a favor. Plant some more peas right now. Tell me if you see any, how much difference you see and when they actually start flowering. I think that extra 3 or 4 weeks gives them a good head start. And I mean, even some plants that were in flower survived the cold. So I think they're going to survive just fine. You really don't want them to flower this early. There's no need for that. But they're going to be in a much better position to start flowering on, you know, right around March 1st, which is when they should start flowering. And then you're going to have a really long harvest. The question is, can you plant this late and still have them start producing as early as March 1st? I'm curious. So on the Gulf Coast, give it a try. In anywhere else, you know, north of the Gulf Coast, you're in prime time. If you're in north of Citronelle, if you're up around Jackson, this is probably a prime time, good time. You're maybe a week or two late, but you're okay. And you're around Birmingham, this is prime time for planting those peas. So what are you going to plant? I'm just going to say, because this is always such an interesting thing for me to do every year. It's just the thing you really want to have happen. Because you've been waiting for this for so long. You can't get peas every month. You're not going to get them during summer. It's going to be too hot. But these green peas, these sugar snaps are really nice. So I've got, and they're really expensive at the grocery store. So I've got this sugar snap pea called Tai Chung 13. It's a, I guess that's Taiwanese. It is a Taiwanese sugar snap that was developed in Taiwan, which has a climate similar to ours, a little warmer generally, but similar to ours, very humid. And so what generally works in Taiwan, I think, you know, is probably going to work pretty well here in Alabama. So Tai Chung 13, sugar snap pea from Kitazawa Seeds. I've got a whole pack of it. Yeah, I'm ready for it. Cascadia, which is an old variety from Oregon State. I've grown it before. It does pretty well. We're going to try it again, see how it works. That's from Territorial. Another one from Territorial called Nairobi. Here's the come on. It says, be one of the first gardeners in America to catch on to Nairobi, a snap pea that's extremely popular in Europe. You can't always trust what's popular in Europe, but we're going to give this a try. These stringless 3 to 3.5 inch dark green pods develop in pairs and are early maturing, sweet and crisp. Mildew-resistant plants make Nairobi a great candidate for fall. I'm not big on stringless because really the strings in sugar snaps are easy to deal with and really don't bother me too much even when they get stringy. But there it is. It's a stringless. Sugar Ann is, I always get Sugar Ann. It's always my favorite. Always one of my favorites. It's a really, really nice snap pea. It doesn't get big. In fact, it's one of those peas that you can, that you use pea brush to grow it on. And if you don't know what pea brush is, it's fun to learn. I don't know who told me about pea brush. I can't even seem to find any references to it anywhere else. It's a term we've used. And what you do is you take just sticks. You just find sticks. Sticks that won't break when you try to poke them in the ground. The sticks aren't, you know, they're just barely more than knee high. They kind of crooked and have branches. And you just stick them in the ground when you plant. When you're cleaning up your yard and you got all those sticks from the last windstorm, you save those. You put them in the ground. You give the peas something to climb on. That's pea brush. With varieties like Sugar Ann, you really don't need a bunch of pea brush. It's really nice to have it, but it doesn't have to be really high. It just needs to be somewhere, needs to come up around your knee, because Sugar Ann's a very compact variety and really, really great. Non-climbing dwarf vines, they do climb, actually. They'll tangle around that pea brush really well. And it makes them easier to see, easier to collect. Sugar Ann, great one. It's just not a big climber like some of the others. And it's a very quick producing pea, which is also very nice. And I'll also say about Sugar Ann, of all of the quick producing peas I've tried, Sugar Ann seems to have the best flavor. I will tell you, sometimes I can't tell the difference between the taste of Sugar Ann and some of the really much longer, the pea varieties that take a lot longer to produce, like Sugar Snap. And Sugar Snap is the name, it's almost a brand name, really, that became a common name for the whole bunch of the potted, the peas that you eat the seeds and the pods at once, snap peas. But Sugar Snap is a great one. It tends to be a little inconsistent. I don't know what's happened. I think the people who were saving that seed kind of lost control of it. So there's some new varieties like Super Sugar Snap, which is designed to be earlier and stringless. I don't find they are as good as the old Sugar Snaps, but on the other hand, I find it very hard to find the old Sugar Snaps that are reliable. So I've got some Super Sugar Snaps too. Great thing to think about. A lot of fun to think about getting those peas planted now. You call me if you've got any other questions, or text me about what you might want to be growing in your yard. So let's see here what we got. Let's see. David Hubble says that he's his tomato seedlings are doing very well. Let's see what else. Let me get this. I know I need to separate and transplant. So he's got pictures. It's fine. David said, I went through the Louisiana varieties I grew last year and focused on the ones I liked best. Creole, Pelican, Louisiana All Seasons, Louisiana Pink, plus the old reliable Celebrity. I have a new one sent to me I'm trying and will pour it out through the seasons. It is from a plantation near Houma. Supposed to be big and prolific. We'll see. So, good. We'll be back here. Give us a call, 251-343-0106, or give us a text.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. David sent me some messages, and it reminds me that I probably haven't harangued you enough, not only about peas, but tomatoes. Look, folks, if you're gonna grow out your own tomatoes from seed, this is it. You cannot wait another minute if you're on the Gulf Coast. You cannot wait. If you're in central Alabama, you cannot wait. You need to go ahead and start those tomatoes right away, because it's going to take them 4 to 6 weeks to get enough leaves, and you're going to miss your planting window if you wait any longer. So it is definitely time. David's plants. Sorry about that, Steve.
Okay,
David's plants
about
look.
To say something.
Yeah. So just get that microphone in front of your face here. David Hubble's plants look really good. Get those tomatoes going, and it's time to do it. Call me if you have any questions about how to do that or when that goes in, or if that sounds strange to you, call and let's talk about it, and we'll figure it all out, okay? So we're fascinated by stink bug this morning, George in Pascagoula and I, and George, that stink bug does seem to be pretty exclusive to junipers, to members of the juniper family, which would include red cedars, and what else did you say you had? Blue Point juniper, yeah. So you got plenty for that to feed on. Probably not causing enough damage for you to even worry with. They're kind of pretty. Can stink bugs be pretty? They are pretty. So what they're doing is they're hiding under the woodpile, as stink bugs often do, to sort of protect themselves from the ravages of a Pascagoula winter. And they're beginning to emerge as it gets warmer. But they're probably not going to be a big deal in your garden at all, if that's okay with you. All right, let's see what we got here. Do we have we do. Sorry. Tommy in Orange Beach, I'm listening. Who's Tommy, you there?
Yes, I am, Bill. Thank you. Hello?
Tell me what's up.
Well, my wife had been given a gift last year of some Persian limes and also key lime trees.
Yes.
I guess in a pot. We've been nursing them through the winter, and I'm just ignorant on what is the best way or the best location or when they should be planted, or just general information on that.
Yeah. So here's the key, and you can do with it what you will. Limes are the least hardy, about the least hardy citrus you can grow. Even in Gulf Shores and Orange Beach, you're going to have a really hard time, and I think you're going to lose them. And both of them make perfectly good limes. I always kept mine in a container. I lost mine only because I had to travel during summer one time, and it got really hot, and I didn't get to water them, and they died. And I need to replace those, and I will someday. But they do really well in a container. Key limes in particular, because they don't get quite as big, but very productive in a container. You'll just get better crops in a container, because you're not going to see damage to the flower buds. So my recommendation is keep them in containers.
Okay.
And keep that container growing in size. Now, let's talk about what you do in winter. So you can certainly bring them into the garage on the very coldest nights. When it gets down below about 28 degrees, you really need to bring them in. And in fact, it doesn't even hurt when it gets below 36 degrees to bring them inside. But in a container. But if that gets to be onerous after a while, because the plants get really large and they're really healthy, here's what I did with my key limes, and it works really well. Plants in containers are more vulnerable to cold unless they're covered. But what I would do with my key limes and my blood oranges is I would take that container and lay it down on the ground during those cold nights and put a blanket over it.
Yep.
Worked great.
I've heard you recommend that before. So yes, thank you.
And it should work great for you, particularly in Gulf Shores. But you're taking a big risk by planting them outside, and you know, it's, I guess you didn't have to pay for them, but if your wife If your wife considers it an important gift to keep, I wouldn't put them outside. I'd keep them in a container. And again, not only is it greater chance that they're going to stay alive, but they're probably going to be more productive that way. And you'll have some questions about when you should increase the pot size, and at a certain point you don't want to keep increasing the pot size, and I'll tell you how to deal with that. All you got to do is call me back. But what size are they now?
You know, each one is probably about 3 feet tall and a couple of feet wide in diameter. I think it's typical, I guess, gallon or 2 gallon, you know, pots that they came in that we've been kind of nursing them inside and outside in. So
it's, I can say that at this point, find a nice pot to put them in. I wouldn't put them in a clay pot because it gets to be really hard to move them around. But
right.
If you can find a good attractive pot, they probably need to be increased. You need to increase the pot size, I can tell at this point. Wait until spring when the roots are going to be, and spring for you is, let's call it, let's say wait until after March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead and pot it up. What you're going to find is, how long has it been in that container?
Since November, I guess. We got them in November.
Yeah, and they had probably been in the container for a while then?
Yes.
So you're going to find that the roots are beginning to wrap in that container. And let me tell you, this is something, you might as well go ahead and get used to this. It takes some stomach to do it. So you're going to pull it out of the pot, and you're going to see those roots wrapped round and round and round, and probably, and kind of filling up, in some places really thick at the bottom of the container. Find your pot. Make sure it's a little bigger. It doesn't have to be super big. It just a little bigger than what you got. And it's, if you're in a 3 gallon, I would go with a 5 to 7. I'd go with a 7 gallon probably.
Right.
Go from 3 to 7, but slice off the bottom 3 inches of soil and roots. Well, 2 inches. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
it's tough, and you're going to say, wow, and it makes all the difference in how that plant will perform. And then you can tease the sides out just a little bit. Don't feel like you got to be really careful with it. Tease those sides out, because you want those roots to begin moving outward into the soil around it, and then set it in the pot. So yeah, for a 3 gallon, 3 inches is excessive. But I would say, I'm looking at the distance between my thumb and my finger, I'm saying take off what's going to be the first inch and a half of soil at the bottom of that pot. Just slice it off with a saw, whatever you can, and pot it up this March, and it's going to do really well.
Well, do they, when I pot them up, and as it gets into spring and summer, do they need to be more in sun or indirect sun or?
You got to have them in full sun.
Okay.
So you definitely want limes. Limes, there is no need to. There is no benefit for shade with a lime. They want full sun.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Call me back. You got any more questions? Hey, we got to take a break. We're going to be back here in just a minute.
The rain is falling.
Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Oh, boy, I hope I got that sneeze in before Steve turned up the mic. Or I blew Steve's ears out. Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning and Alabama Sunday morning. And that brief sneezing episode will soon be over, I can assure you.
Bless you.
We're going to talk about, we're going to talk about what to do in the garden. It's spring. You know, Punxsutawney Phil, is that how you say it? Is that how you say it, Steve?
Yes.
Yes.
That's the groundhog of all prognosticators.
Yes, that's the groundhog. You know, it's less important that you pay attention to what Punxsutawney Phil does than the fact that they're trotting Punxsutawney Phil out when they trot Punxsutawney Phil out, which is on or about St. Bridget's Day. It's on or about the start of the Irish Spring in Balk. It's on or about Mardi Gras, the start of Mardi Gras. It's really about the start of spring, and that's what we're here to talk about. I'm going to emphasize it because it's so important, and you need to be thinking about it for your garden. It's just the time. It's that time of year. So let's do start thinking about that. I'll just tell you, I am. During the break, is this bad of me? I don't know if it's bad of me or not. During the break, I was looking for more seeds. I'm deciding what it is I'm going to plant. Now, I hope you don't mind that I did that, but that's what I did. And you should be too. Find some spare time. Get the seeds. You don't have a lot of time left. You don't have a lot of time left. So let's go with it. Let's go with it, and let's get it done. Feel free to give me a call this morning, 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. If you don't call me, if you don't text me, I feel like I've done something wrong. I hope I haven't. Well, I probably have. But you'll forgive me if I did something wrong, right? I hope. Do people do things wrong? Sometimes they do. But give us a call this morning. Listen, here's the thing. So you're giving me time now to think about what it is I want to do. So I am going to talk about my nasturtiums and think about which ones, because I got way too many packs of nasturtiums. I always do this. I got way too many different kinds, and I'm going to think about the ones that I'm really going to plant. I will say that Moonlight has been a very productive nasturtium for me. It's a climbing nasturtium. I'm just going to run down the list here. And the cool thing about it is that these climbing nasturtiums, Yeti's another one, I think. Yes, it's creamy white on long trailing vines. Those climbing nasturtiums can be really productive in terms of leaves and other things. And so just take a look at those nasturtiums. They'll keep growing long strands. And why do you grow nasturtiums? Is it because they're pretty? Okay, that's fine. I'm all right with that. They are. They're very pretty. And you know I'm, but you know, it's, I don't think about pretty when I think, when I plant nasturtiums, because I have this other thing going on, which is my stomach and my taste buds. And what I'm thinking about is these are going to be delicious. They're going to produce tons of flowers, and there is nothing better than eating nasturtium flowers. They are so incredible. They're so sweet. They're so peppery. People who don't really know how good they are, just don't get it. But you got to try them. And you're not going to be able to go to the grocery store and try nasturtium flowers, are you? And that's unfortunate that we live our life based on what we can try at the grocery store. But just trust me on this. Now, I will say they're a little peppery. The flowers are a little peppery. This is an asset to me. If you don't like spicy peppery at all, you might not enjoy nasturtiums. But it's a mild spiciness. It's just delicious. It's really great, and an incredible sweetness when you eat the flowers. The leaves are also good. So we got a lot of varieties here. I'm going to go through them here in just a minute. We talked about the long growing ones, Moonlight and Yeti. Don't forget those. We're going to come back here in just a minute. But we do have a caller, Steve. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Francis in Mobile.
Francis, I'm listening. Tell me what's up.
Well, first of all, Bill, this is Francis from Press Register Days.
So, Francis!
How are you?
Oh, good to hear from you.
Well, thank you. I was listening. It's funny, you're on down here right when I'm driving to church. So
yes,
I get
yes.
to listen to you every Sunday. Anyway, you were talking to the previous caller who wanted, you know, he had the lime trees, and you were telling him how to cut the bottoms off when he's planting them in a pot. Well, because I'm so lazy, I happen to have several camellias and also yes. a bottle brush that are in pots and have probably, counting the time they were at the nursery, they've probably been in pots for 2 or 3 years, and I want to put them in the ground finally this spring. Do I do the same thing? Is that a thing you would do for plants going into the ground? I'm sure they're pretty root-bound.
Yes, Francis. The simple answer is yes.
Okay.
So, and yes, I'm sure they're root bound. So that'll give them a good start. You know, when I was at the botanical gardens, I really didn't know how far to take this, and I was just beginning. You know, Tommy Dodd, our old friend of ours from Mobile, would tell me, "Oh, you need to tease it apart," and Tommy would be a little careful about it. And then I had read some people saying, from University of Florida, saying, just slice those things off. And so I remember the first time I really tried the slicing method, and it scared me to death because this was an old plant. Somebody had given me an old camellia. And it was, it had been in a pot like, goodness gracious, it was just ridiculous. So what I did was I pulled it out of the pot. I just sliced. It was a big pot, so I sliced 3 or 4 inches, and I thought, well, we're going to see if this thing works.
Boy, it just, one or the other.
It, boom. Yeah, it just, it jumped into the ground right away. And I think it just makes it stimulates growth. You don't want to do it. You don't want to do it. If you've got a lime tree, and I'm going to interfere with your church service here in a minute, but you don't, if you've got a lime tree,
okay.
Yeah, you want to do it after it warms up so that those roots will respond.
Okay.
If you've got a camellia, you can do it now. But but it really depends on whether it's tropical or not as to when I would do it. But yes, Francis, I would cut it off, and it is so good to hear from you.
Well, it's good to hear from you, and I thought, I got to call Bill right now, because as you told the lime tree fellow, it must, I already feel my heart just, you know, twisting and,
yes.
and turning at the thought of taking a knife to my camellias.
Yes, yes.
But
so just, and it'll probably take a saw, Francis. Find a little fine-tooth saw like you trim branches with, and it'll help you to cut through some of those roots. Or take some clippers, some pruning clippers, too, that you don't mind dulling the blades on because you got all that soil. And just go to it. Francis, call me again.
Alrighty.
It's good to hear from you.
I will. Thanks very much. Okay.
Yeah. Bye. All right. Yeah, so Francis and I worked together back in the days. Some of you don't remember. There were newspapers. And we worked together a lot, Francis, on the editorial page. And I was an environmental editor. I was one of those things we used to call a journalist. We don't have those as much anymore. And it's scary. It's really interesting that people are out condemning journalists at a time when really there aren't many journalists left.
When I was a child, my family,
a bunch of columnists like me. Hey, we're going to be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
And there's a backwards old town that's often...
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Rain on my face.
All right, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. Potter Farm sent me a message and on ISA, which is the International Society of Arborists, and their recommendations on dealing with large container trees, which is slightly different but similar. In a 3 to 7 gallon size pot, most of the root concentration is going to be at the bottom of the pot. And that's why I say you really need to hit that bottom, particularly if it's been in there a long time. You can shave the sides as well. But of course, their ISA recommends taking off a 2-inch piece all the way around, and you wouldn't want to do that in a smaller container. As you get to bigger trees, you really got to think about this. Now, I don't, and I will tell you that Francis and I had a conversation just now about some root-bound plants that she has, and I'm pretty sure that they're in less than 7-gallon containers. So I think I probably did okay. Once you slice off that bottom, it's going to open up. You're going to find that because those roots tend to concentrate, it's going to open up the sides pretty well. At least I found that, and you don't need to tease the sides as much. If you have a bigger plant, it is good to shave down the sides as well. And particularly if it's root bound all the way to the top, you'll want to shave down on the sides as well. But I do both. And that recommendation comes from some work done by University of Florida looking at both smaller plants and larger plants and their tendency to get root bound and what your success is. The plant that I took out, that had a big camellia. I think it was a camellia. It was a camellia. And it had been grown in a container for, oh my goodness, forever. I don't remember. It must have been a camellia. And so it was this big, tall container. It was the container set up to my waist. And it was very narrow. And getting it out of that container without breaking the container was a challenge in and of itself, I will tell you. But I pulled it, I got it out of there. We could talk about some of the tools I have to do that, pulling things out of containers. It can be a challenge. So I got it out of there. I sliced off the bottom. It was 3 to 6 inches. I sliced off on the bottom. I sliced the sides, too, as well, which is the ISA recommendation, to get back to where you don't have any wrapping roots. There. So, yeah, it's what you do with a smaller container, it's a little harder to slice down the sides, I find, with a smaller container. But if you can, do it. Don't take off 2 inches, the way ISA says, because that's only for big containerized stuff. But you do want to break up those roots on the sides. Thank you for reminding me, Potter Farm, that I need to emphasize doing that. Sadie in Silver Hill, I've done a vegetable garden before and have prepped one this year. I started broccoli, peppers, tomatoes, and eggplant in early January, which have almost become very leggy. Yes. Should I try to transplant them or should I start anew? So here's the trick. When you start plants inside, they do tend to become more leggy, and there's several reasons for that. One of which is that they're straining for sunlight, and they just are inevitably leggy. One of the things I do, they're fine. I know they're leggy. You're fine. You can plant them a little bit deeper. If you're planting the broccoli needs to go on outside. So get that broccoli outside if it's got some size on it. When did you say you did it? Early January. You can show me the pictures. But if the broccoli has true leaves, that is the leaves that have a little bit of frill around the edge rather than those seed leaves that come out that don't have much frill around them. If they have true leaves and if they got 3 or 4 ranks of true leaves, you need to just plant it outside. When you plant it outside, be a little gentle, but just plant it and plant it a little bit deeper. The broccoli will do fine. Not too much deeper, just a little bit to hold that stem up a little bit. You can do it that way. It'll work fine. It'll work better. The other thing you can do with any of those plants, the peppers, the tomatoes, the eggplants, if they're leggy, you can put them in a slightly larger container and build up the soil around them, and they will put out new roots there. Wow, isn't that cool? Peppers, less so. Eggplants, a little less so. Tomatoes, very much so. And that corrects that legginess. But I find that just building up that soil as the plant grows really helps when you're growing them inside. Now, let me tell you something else. Here's a trick I do. I don't let's say I'm starting tomatoes. And let's say I've got a pot that's, 4 inches high. I'm going to start those tomatoes. In fact, I'm going to use a cloth bag. But let's say it was a plastic pot. I'm going to start those tomatoes with the container only filled about 2 inches, about 2 to 3 inches tall, so that I can put more soil on the top. It's even better when they come up and start to get leggy, because I know they're going to root out into that really well. It's even better if you use the cloth bags, which I've been using. They're cheaper, less expensive than most other things. But, you know, what's really cool about them is that you can fold the tops down. Ha ha! You could just turn over. What does that remind me of? Kind of like a... Oh, I don't know. It's kind of like when we used to have handkerchiefs and you had to put them in your pocket. You kind of just fold that top down, or like you're folding the tops of your boots or your socks down. You know, if any of you remember having big boots that you could fold down, or the top of your socks down, you just fold it down so that it's only half as tall. You put your soil in there. You put your seed in there. The seed will grow up. It's going to get a little leggy because you're doing it inside. And you just roll that top up and put a little more soil in there as it goes up. It's pretty cool. Another thing that keeps your seeds from being leggy is when you get warm days, and for the broccoli, you had plenty of warm days to do this. Get them outside. Get them in full sun. Get a little bit of breeze on them. It'll help to strengthen that. It'll help to strengthen that, and just bring the broccoli in on the coldest night. So tomatoes, you know, it might be a little cold for the tomatoes and the peppers and the eggplants, but on warm days, go ahead and get them outside when the temperatures are in the 60s, get them out, or 70s, which it's going to happen. Get them outside, get them that sunlight they need, get a little bit of breeze, and those stems will toughen up. The plants will develop more normally. So those are the two tricks. I hate to repeat myself. Did that make sense, Sadie? But if it doesn't make sense, you call me back. What are some other recommended tips for rookie vegetable gardeners? Boy, that's a big question. Should I transplant them still? So you could, Sadie, send me a picture of those. If you're worried about them, I think they're going to be fine. Everybody has leggy plants. When they start them inside, no matter what you do. Jim's sending me pictures. The Campanellis are about to go in full bloom. That's looking good. Jim's spring indicators, the blueberry buds are about to open. Ooh. Let's hope they hold in there just a little longer, Jim. I hate to lose another year of blueberries. But the buds are definitely swelling. We would like for those blueberries to hold in just a little bit longer. You know, one of the things that we're having to do, Jim, it reminds me to say, as we're getting more and more of these unpredictable spring frost, and they're becoming a little more unpredictable now. They're occurring a little late. We're getting blueberry varieties that flower later. And there's a lot of new blueberry varieties, and I think it's one thing to look for, particularly if you're on the coast, anywhere in Alabama. Get the old-fashioned varieties that bloom early, because you'll hit it right most years, but then there's going to be these years when you don't hit it right. And so have some blueberry varieties that bloom later, that bloom a little later. There's some varieties that bloom, and I can't remember the names now. I'll remember them. Oh, maybe I'll remember before the show's over with. But there's some new varieties that actually bloom late, but produce berries early. Isn't that cool? And the berries are pretty good. They're pretty good. It's a bunch of names for Florida towns. In Georgia towns. I'll think of them here in just a minute. But some of these new varieties are good that way. So, yeah, all that's happening. The Campanellis are blooming. Elderberries are sprouting and starting to leaf out. Isn't that cool? Elderberries, the things we don't take enough advantage of, I'm afraid. What to do with my oleander? Oh, look at that. Yes, it gets cold. It happens. You're probably going to need to cut it back. Hold off as long as your spouse and neighbors will allow. Let's just hold off. Let's take a look at it. Okay? We'll be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Sadie, I got your picture. I didn't get a picture of the broccoli. But it's probably going to look similar to the tomato. And that those long stems and that leaning tomato says, oh, boy, I've been inside way too long. Why am I not outside seeing sunlight? And that's basically what's going on there. The conditions in the house are a little warm. When you get these warm conditions, it tends to elongate the stems as well, particularly with the brassicas, the cabbage, kale, broccoli, cauliflower kind of family. Yes, get those plants outside. You can, so your container is filled up to the brim already, isn't it? So here's another thing I would say, Sadie, in the future, you don't really need more soil around the roots. You got plenty. You can fill that pot up just a little bit more to help hold those plants up, but give them some sunlight. It'll make a big difference. When you plant those, you're going to want to plant them. They'll still be a little leggy, but plant them just a wee bit deeper just to hold the stems up. Don't plant them too deep. There's no benefit to that. Just a wee bit deeper to hold the stem up. Bruce reminds me, Sadie, that there's some other tips I can give you, and they're pretty good. For peppers, folks, if you're growing things like ajis and even habaneros, what else? Bell peppers, maybe not so much, but maybe even bell. It'd be interesting to experiment with bell peppers. I can't experiment with bell peppers because I just don't feel like it's worth my time to grow bell peppers. But some of you can grow bell peppers. It's a fine thing to do. You'll have to experiment on your own. But I can tell you with most peppers, particularly the ones that take a long time to produce, and this would be the ajis, AJIs, from South America, and the habaneros, start them in fall, and that's what Bruce did, and overwinter them. You know, if you're on the Gulf Coast, you can start them in October, November. If you're farther north, you might want to start them a little bit easier. The ground's warm, they come up fast, you can keep them outside, you can get them, they don't get too leggy outside, they get a little bit of size, you put them, you just and they're going to get a little bit of size inside, but you give them some sunlight, it's really nice. So if you've got a place to bring them on the cold nights, it's really good to start those peppers in fall. It makes a big difference in when they start producing, and you don't have to deal with the fact that peppers are very finicky with cold soils. Sadie, looking at your pictures, I'll give you one other tip. Use a smaller container. That's a lot of root room for those plants. It can increase the chance of damping off because it's really hard to monitor. So I would start small. And Sadie, look at these cloth bags. So somebody asked me what size I'm using. And the nice thing about these clear spun bond is, cloth containers. Cloth grow bags, they're small. I mean, you can get them so that really they're only 3 inches high. Just little packets, just little things, and you can get them in all sizes. So experiment. If you get anything that's, I have one here that's, how tall is that? That's about 6-7 inches tall, maybe. So what I'll do if I'm going to start any vegetables in that pot is what I'm going to do is I'm going to fold the top down. I'm just going to fold it down because I don't need all that room initially. And I'm going to fold it down halfway so that it's only half as tall. I'm going to put the soil in there, And then as the plant grows, I'm going to keep adding soil and pulling it up. Huh? And then when it's ready to put in the garden, I could plant the whole thing. I don't think there's any problem with doing that with most plants. Just plant the whole container. But most of the time, I end up tearing it a little bit. I don't know whether it makes any difference, but I do to put it in the ground. There you go. So there it is, something to think about. What's the size grow bags for seed starting? Now, they have these big grow bags that are great, too. And they're 1 gallon, 5 gallon, 7 gallon, 10 gallon grow bags. And they're really great because you don't get the root. You tend not to get the root boundness that you get with plastic pots. A little bit, but not much. And there's several reasons for that. With these cloth bags, the only thing I'll add is that you do have to watch the watering. You won't overwater them. There's much less chance you'll overwater, and there's a little less chance that you're going to get any kind of damping off diseases as a result. But they will dry out a little faster, which is a benefit, actually, as long as you're watching, as long as you're paying attention. So you just have to water. And you can water them from the bottom really easily. If they look like they're drying out, don't feel like you have to water them over the top if you're worried about displacing your seeds or something like that. You just take them and you put them in a bowl of water. They absorb the water. Boom, there it is. The other thing I'll say, Sadie, is that it helps to have a heating mat to get these things started. You can ask me about that. And the other thing that Bruce reminds me of, because he has this pretty picture of it, is he got a frost cloth to put over those tomatoes. And I use a wall of water, but having that frost cloth over tomatoes or a wall of water makes a ton of difference when we have these uncertain springs, because you're going to need to get it out before we get the really brutal summer. Right? You want it to produce before brutal summer, but you're still planting into an uncertain spring. So having a wall of water or something ready to protect these plants once you put them outside. There you go. Our Native Seed Facebook page is nearing 50 members, according to Anna. And this is great. Let's see. And Anna sent me a question this morning. Let's see. The Facebook page, I'll tell us what the name of it is. It's the AL. Anna, send me the name of that real quick so I don't have to go on the internet and look it up again just to make sure I get it right so people can find it. But it really is good. So she did send me a picture of a plant that looks like goldenrod. I'm going to look at it here real quickly. And it is very much goldenrod. It is absolutely goldenrod. I have great confidence that it's goldenrod. There you go. Good. So I do agree with that. So we have this Native Seed Facebook page. I think I'm a member of it. Yes, it's I have to look it up, unfortunately, but let me go. Here we go. I'm gonna do this. Command C. And I'm going to go up here. Give me just a second, folks. And I'm going to plug it in. And we're going to look at it. And I can see it right away. It's the AL Coastal Native Seed Exchange. The AL Coastal Native Seed Exchange. And I see lots of faces here. There's David and Jeremiah, and there's this guy in a cowboy hat, and just a whole bunch of people. So it's really good to see that network growing. Please introduce yourself to the group in the comments. And this is really nice. So it's good, and I will try to monitor this and figure out and weigh in when I need to. But it looks like Anna has made something good here, and it's a good start. So if you're interested in Alabama Coastal native seeds. These are plants that are native to Alabama that have been here for a million years. Not tomatoes necessarily, which we grow, but they haven't been here a million years. These are plants that are long-term natives could be flowers, they could be fruits. And we're looking for sources of those seeds, and we don't trust somebody in California to produce Alabama seeds, right? Or Wisconsin, or Texas, which is what we tend to do when we want native seeds, which is we ain't getting what we think we're getting. So we want our own seeds. Isn't that cool? Isn't that nice? So Anna has started this group. It's on Facebook. It's a way to exchange information and eventually exchange seeds, and we're going to figure out how to make that work, right, at some point, Anna. And I think that could work out really well. And maybe we can even combine that. Maybe we can even make that work at Mobile Botanical Gardens. We'll certainly see. Let's see who else we got here. Oh, yeah, lots of neat comments on this page. I need to read through them all. Boy, lots going on here. So check out Anna, thank you for doing this. It was so good. It's so good. The AL, that's for Alabama, AL Coastal Native Seed Exchange. You can look it up on Facebook, AL Coastal Native Seed Exchange. Let's see what else we got here. Do you mind telling us the brand of grow bags you like? There are a ton of them on Amazon. Thank you, sir. You know, David, good to hear from you, David. No, I can't really say. I don't really know that there is a brand that I like. I've tried several. The cheaper ones seem to be as good as the more expensive ones. I don't see any problem with them falling apart. They're not supposed to last forever. Some lose their handles, but did I keep up with which ones lost their handles and which ones didn't? No, of course I didn't. I just kind of used them. You don't actually bring a tag along, and I didn't do a trial. They all seem to work reasonably well. Some probably are going to last a little longer than others, but for the small grow bags, which is what we've been talking about, these, and you know, there's probably another name for them besides grow bag, and somebody will promptly write in and tell me what you call them. But these are small cloth containers. They're not, you know, they're not a couple of inches across and maybe 3 to 4, 6 inches tall, and they're clear. It's just a clear fabric, and very flexible and very small, and they're great for starting seedlings in. And I didn't keep up with the brands. They don't, just didn't. All right, we'll be back. We got a little bit of time left. If you've got some questions, give us a call.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
I'll tell you what. I got a picture from Alicia, and Alicia has a system, folks. She's got a system. So she's got her sugar snaps coming up. They are looking so pretty. They're looking so good. She's going to have great sugar snaps, I can tell. Looking good, Alicia. Thank you for sending those pictures. Maybe it will occur. Encourage other people to get their sugar snaps going. I'm seeing, you know, this is an interesting system you have here. So So tell me about the wire that you have on the ground, Alicia. Send me a message what you're doing there and exactly how that works. And I'm kind of curious as to if you've got an advantage for that. It may be the wire is there just to keep dogs and armadillos from digging in the beds, and that's great too. I'm wondering if you had another purpose in mind. Always wanting to learn from people, things they're doing. Alicia, great, thank you. The person who called in about texted in about the oleander, my advice remains, cattle guard to keep the corgi out. That's right. That's right. Dog protection. That's what makes sense. The person who called in about the oleander. You know, there's lots of green left on that plant if you look at it carefully. And I would not cut it back yet. You're going to know a little better what you want to cut back. And when it, as it develops a little later, probably around, you're going to start seeing it pushing buds, probably around March 15 to March 30. And then that'll give us a better sense of what's going on. It should drop most of those dead leaves. If you can just hold on for just a while, and you'll know better what to cut. Every year, it's always good to cut back some of the tallest stems, and this will be a fine year to do it. It's as good a year as any to do it. But I can't really recommend that you do it until you see what's surviving, because it may be that some of the tallest stems may be some of your best survivors, and it'll keep you from having a big gap in the landscape. So just hold on. Hold on. Let's wait till about March 15th. As long as your anyone you may live with in the house and your neighbors don't mind, just hold on just a little while. You'll be better off, and then you can make better decisions about when to prune from that freeze damage. Good. What else we got? I think we've answered most of those questions, and you better call me quick, because you know what I'm fixing to do? I'm fixing to go start planting seeds. I'm just sorry. If you think I'm going to stay on the phone all day when I could be out planting seeds, you have made a serious mistake. It's time to plant seeds, folks. It's spring. It's in bulk. It is St. Breed's Day. It's Mardi Gras. All these are holidays meant to encourage us to celebrate the lengthening days, which is going to make a huge difference for your plants, and the warming weather. And about February 15th, it's the official start of spring here along the Gulf Coast. About February 15th, it's the start of one of those early spring seasons, even... I had six seasons, and sometimes I sit and think, I really don't have enough seasons. There's really some things that happen even before February 15th that are good signals of spring. So one of these days I'm going to break all that out and think about it. It's really fun to think about, but it's coming, and it's time to start working on it. So please, please, folks, let's get it going. I don't like haranguing. I got more seeds to buy. I got tons of nasturtiums. I don't think I told you about all the nasturtiums. Can I just do that here? Since this is what I want to obsess about today, I've got this one called Copper Sunset. I really liked Copper Sunset. It was really beautiful. Did really, really well. I highly recommend it. It came from, and Creamsicle, I didn't think would do that well. It's absolutely beautiful. And it has done very well for me. Both of those came from Renee's garden. Moonlight I recommended earlier. It's a great one. I really like it. There was one I grew. What is that one? It was Caribbean Mix or something. Where is it? I'm looking for it because I'm going to plant it. I'm going to plant it today. And Caribbean Mix was very nice, very productive, had really great flowers. What else have I... Oh, boy, there's just some great things. Cherry's Jubilee had a great color. I really like that color. And the Amazon Jewels were very nice. They were also good. It's a long-growing one. It's a tall-growing one. Did I mention Cherry's Jubilee? I think I did. Yeti, and the Tall Trailing Mix. This is the time for getting those nasturtiums growing. If you haven't already done it, it's really great. And I love to have nasturtiums. They're great to eat. Spitfire. There's another one called Spitfire. It's a climbing nasturtium. I think it's really got a great flower color. It seemed to do really, really well. Your tomatoes. It's time to get those tomatoes going, folks. It's time to get the peas planted in your garden. This may be the last call. Time to do all this. Alicia, I can't see your Puerto Cortez. I can't tell, but give it a shot. The pictures didn't come through for whatever reason. But folks, it's time to get this going. It's time to get the seed started. It's time to enjoy spring. I encourage you to do it in between your Mardi Gras parties. It's the nice thing about living on the Gulf Coast is having Mardi Gras Day as a holiday. And if you manage to stay sober enough to plant seeds, it's a great day for planting seeds and getting them in the garden. It's spring. It's time to begin thinking about those things. And I also want to remind people about our new Facebook page. Not our. It's really, Anna did this. She did a great job. It's got a lot of members. Take a look at it. The Alabama Coastal Native Seed Exchange. The Alabama Coastal Native Seed Exchange. It's got right at 50 members now. It'll be great for all of you to participate in this, and it's a great seed exchange network. We talk a lot about it, about how to make seed exchange of native seeds really work here along the Gulf Coast, and Anna has made a great start for us. She's made a great start for us. Meanwhile, what have you got left to do? What have I got? Quick question. Here's what I've got left to do. I'm looking at cucumbers right now. I'm trying to decide what cucumbers am I going to plant. It's a little too early to plant them. I don't even recommend planting cucumbers in pots. You can do it. It's really good in those little cloth bags. Somebody tell me next week. Just clobber me and tell me what you call those little cloth bags, the little ones, not the big ones. There must be a special name for them. But the cucumbers, really great to start in cloth bags. They don't like a lot of root disturbance. And so I'm looking at all kind of cucumbers. Which cucumbers am I going to grow this year? It's always a challenge because there's a bunch of them. I really like some of the Japanese cucumbers. They can be really delicious. And I'm going to go back to Kitazawa and look at those. But meanwhile, I'm looking at some of the traditional sort of American cucumbers because it's time to do that as well. Nasturtiums, tomatoes, cucumbers, squash. See you later, folks. I'm going to get started planting.
Traveling through this world alone, there is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land.